Customs and Border Protection's up to about $2.5 billion in spending on equipment to provide a firewall against materials terrorists could make to use weapons of mass destruction. They spend a lot less than that to make sure the equipment and the operators are doing the job. David Maurer is Director of Homeland Security and Justice Issues at the Government Accountability Office, and he took a deep look at how CBP can make the most out of its covert operations budget. Dave, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for being here today. Tell me about the covert operations that CBP conducts, to the extent that you can, at least. I note that some of the information that you submitted to the agency itself has been redacted. It's sensitive. So to the extent that you can tell me what they do in these covert operations, what are they doing, what are they looking at, and how does it work?
Absolutely, Francis. Glad to be on the show again today. What CBP is doing with their covert operations, basically they're taking a radiological material, something that should be detected by the radiation detection equipment that CBP has deployed across the borders. They go undercover, and they're trying to see if the equipment detects what they're bringing across the border and see if it's properly identified as a radiological material. They do this covertly. In other words, they don't give anyone a heads up that they're coming. And after the test is over, they report back to the folks that were supposed to detect the material and let them know how they did.
And so it sounds like the same kind of operations that we see in any number of different security issues across the country, where the agency itself essentially does dry runs to see how the testing systems and policies and procedures and equipment that they have in place works. Is that a fair assessment, Dave?
That's entirely correct. I mean, CBP has spent $2.5 billion purchasing equipment and training their employees to use it properly, so it makes good sense that one of the tools they're using to make sure that's working as designed is covert testing.
I'm struck then by the difference in figures here, because your report says CBP had $1 million budget for covert operations of various activities, including nuclear and radiological testing, covering fiscal years 2009 to 2013. That is that's a fraction of a fraction of what they spent on the actual operations to go back and test their work.
That's absolutely the case. I mean, typically you don't talk about millions with an M, you talk about billions with a B for a lot of major government programs. In this case, it's a very small operation. Now, it's important to point out that there's no legal requirement for CBP to do any of this. There is a DHS policy that requires them to do one or two tests a year, and they're doing many more than that one or two. It's about one to two dozen a year, depending on the year. So they're doing more than what DHS requires, but it's not a very substantial investment of resources relative to the size of the issue and the number of ports of entry in the United States.
These operations live in CBP's Operational Field Testing Division, I learned from your work. And you're right, OFTD conducted 144 covert operations at 86 locations from fiscal year 06 to 13 and chose from among a total of 655 U.S. air, land, and seaport facilities, checkpoints, and some international locations. There are disconnects here, though, from the way that I read your report. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one of the real challenges that they face is they're not devoting a lot of resources toward this activity. So we had hoped to have seen a risk-based approach. In other words, you can't test every single port of entry every single year. So how are you going to make decisions on what to test? Well, you would think that risk would be part of that determination. Unfortunately, we found that was not the case, that they weren't taking risk into consideration and deciding where they were conducting these covert tests.
Were you able to get a sense of how they did decide, whether they were just pulling names out of a hat or rotation in or something like that?
Well, yeah, they were using they were looking at volume of traffic. So in other words, what ports of entry had the most trucks or the most containers from seaports moving through, or sometimes management requests from specific locations, or they were following up on prior covert tests. So it wasn't a total blind random selection, but it certainly did not include a risk-based assessment, and that was one of the major recommendations in our report.
But those all sound like there is some element of risk management involved in each of those, unless I'm off base. So why was what they were doing not risk-informed enough, I guess, for what you wanted them to do?
Well, within different offices in DHS and other locations, there exist different assessments of the risks and the threats from having nuclear material or nuclear devices or improvised nuclear devices smuggled across the border. We thought that that was something that DHS should factor in their decision-making on where to do these covert tests. Relying on volume of traffic, for example, it makes you wonder whether a terrorist would want to bring material across one of the busiest ports of entry into the U.S. because it's probably going to be an area where we have the most technical capability. Maybe they'd want to bring it across an area that's not as well equipped and doesn't see as much traffic.
David Maurer, Director of Homeland Security and Justice Issues at the Government Accountability Office. Another disconnect that you pointed out, OFTD hasn't issued reports annually as planned on covert operation results and recommendations. Is it your sense that they're not doing the work or that they're not releasing the information so that they can understand what they've learned from the testing work?
It's more the latter. They're definitely doing covert tests on an annual basis. They had an internal policy goal to issue an annual report summarizing results of those tests. There are a number of years where they didn't meet that goal. They didn't issue a report that summarized what they found in the course of a specific fiscal year. And we think that that's something important to do. And in addition, they were also not following up on the results of deficiencies they found at individual ports of entry. So if they found problems in a specific location, they weren't going back to make sure that those problems had been fixed.
You write, OFTD tracks the status of corrective actions taken to address recommendations, as you mentioned a moment ago, but CBP doesn't track the corrective actions. That's disconnect number three that I took away from your report. They are they're tracking what they did to fix any problems that they find, but they're not. My takeaway is they're not tracking what they might have missed that they didn't get.
Yeah, basically, right. They do go back and try to follow up on if there are systemic problems. If they find a similar problem at five or six different locations, they'll follow up on that. But if there's something that they found at an individual location, they're not going back to follow up on those. So you need to have that feedback mechanism to make sure that the folks on the border are making the necessary improvements to close the door on this threat.
What were some of the reasons that you got, or a reason that you got, for the issue with the timeliness and comprehensiveness of the reports? Because it seems to me that might be a key in being able to make some progress on some of the other issues, including the corrective actions. If all of that information is collected in one place and is pretty easy to find and transparent, that seems to me it would remove one of the barriers, at least.
Yeah, what CBP said that the major challenge they faced was resources. You know, this is a very small function relative to the size of CBP, much less the Department of Homeland Security as a whole. And from their perspective, they were challenged from a resources perspective to issue an annual report in a timely way.
They just didn't have the money.
Didn't have the people to do it every year like they had hoped.